just got a lot on the Habs today. We got a lot on the Vegas Golden Knights today as well. Bottom of the hour, Craig Simpson from Hockey Night will be aboard to discuss all these matters, as will Anthony Stewart and Justin Bourne, who join us as we gather here at the top of the hour for another edition of Hockey Central. Gentlemen, good afternoon.
Good day, sir.
Okay. Get the niceties out of the way here. 4-1 is the final. We're going to get into a couple of other issues around the NHL as well, but we'll focus on the game from last night. This was, this was a matchup that was, I don't want to read too much into it and say that this is a sort of audit on the quality of the Scotia North Division and what does this say and does it validate all the whispers about how it's the weakest division in the NHL this season. Well, just look at it as one game, and we'll see what happens in subsequent games. But, you know, Montreal had a really good start, and then afterwards, Vegas just started to pour it on, and Montreal didn't seem to have any answers. Justin, we'll start with you. Did you see it that way as well?
Yeah, you know, one thing we talked about in the lead-up to this series was the teams that Montreal had played previously, you could both call a little bit top-heavy, I think. You know, the Leafs tried to make their hay with their talent in their top six. The Winnipeg Jets, no different, but Vegas was not going to give them that opportunity. They were deeper all the way through. And last night, I didn't think Vegas' top six were particularly good. I thought the Danault line, once again, did their thing and kept them in check, but keeping a top six of this Vegas team in check isn't enough, and they got scoring through the rest of their lineup and from their back end, and it's going to be a lot tougher to shut down a team as well-rounded as Vegas is.
Stewie.
Yeah, we use the term a lot, out-goalied, but last night they got out-defensed by Vegas Golden Knights, and you know, it's just not about the quality of the defensemen, it's just the cohesion that they have, and you know, going to that first goal by Theodore there. Did anyone notice, like, it was a set play? It was a set play, quick bumper pass. And I haven't even seen that shovel pass before. Usually now you spread the line as a defenseman, but that was a quick play there. So for me, the Vegas Golden Knights, they just out-muscled. But Montreal, they held in it. You know, their number one goal for the first period was probably to take the crowd out of it. And they did that for the first 10 minutes. But it comes down to details. And I'm sure we'll get into it a little bit more. But the details on the faceoffs, details about capitalizing on the power play and specialty teams. But for sure, they got out-defensed.
Cole Caulfield mentioning special teams with the power play marker, his first playoff goal. That made it 2-1. But then Janmark right away, right after. And then a real nice goal after that to make it 4-1. A couple of things in there. That first period by Montreal, it seemed as if right away part of the strategy was get to mark Andre Fleury, get right in his face, swarm the crease, stay in the crease after whistles. And to no one's surprise, that was Brendan Gallagher's game in the first. And I thought maybe the funniest thing I saw all game, very subtly and in very Marc Andre Fleury fashion, in that first scrum in front of Fleury and Gallagher's right in the middle of it, did you guys see Fleury take his helmet off and skate away with it?
No, I didn't.
He took Gallagher's helmet off, and you saw it, Stewie, and then skated away with his helmet.
Yeah, and I think that's just sending a message back to him, saying, hey, you want to play these little fun and games, I can get in the mix too. And Fleury's been known to do that, not being rattled by guys crashing the crease, and you know, he'll give a guy a little shot and sort of have a smile. So he's one of those guys. He's not easily rattled. And I wrote down this term last night just watching the game. It's from the movie, one of these movies here, where the only two things you can control is your smiles and your cries. And when things go bad, you know, the Vegas Golden Knights, they just continue to smile. You know, Caulfield goal, they score, they get momentum back. 50 seconds later, they score to extend the lead again. So this Vegas team, they're not easily rattled in any sense of the word.
There's a couple of things there in that first as well. Like, there's a couple of moments, like Gallagher getting in Marc-Andre Fleury's faces is one of them. The way that they came out with a real step was another one. And then when Romanov hit Alex Pietrangelo and stood him up, and you saw Shea Weber after with the little sort of like veteran smile and the pat on the head, like, way to go, kid. I used to do that on the regular when I was your age here in the NHL too. It seemed as if Montreal was trying to right away, A, even though they are very much the underdog here, Justin, show the Vegas Golden Knights that they're not going to be pushed around and they're not going to be big dog. Now, by the end of the night, it's 4-1 and Vegas is in control of the game. And it never felt for a second really like Vegas was out of control of this game. But I thought Montreal did a good job right out of the gate sort of trying to establish that they're not going to get shoved by this juggernaut Vegas team.
Yeah, no, the theory was great. You know, come out there and announce yourself. And Brandon Gallagher, you know, they had a great highlight package at intermission there. I think Bieksa was talking about it and showing Gallagher, like, continually getting to the net even after the whistle, just continuing to go there. So smart idea to get in their face. I thought a number of penalties kind of derailed them when they had the momentum and were trying to announce themselves and you know, be physical, and all of a sudden you're shorthanded, and it's tough to be assertive when you're the person killer, you're the side killing on the penalty kill. So I thought that derailed them a little bit, but I like the idea in theory. Just they didn't give themselves a chance to play that through.
Yeah, and, you know, Montreal, they had 52 hits last night, but it's almost like when you're fighting, you know, your little brother, he may get all those power hits and you let him take a couple shots at you, but then you give him that that big, big blow. And I go back to I think it was the hit on Perry by Whitecloud where he just clocked him. And that neutralized Perry pretty well. So they can play that big boy hockey game, and I don't think Montreal, they need to get into that game because they got some heavy boys on Vegas that can handle that. So I think they just got to continue to try to rattle Fleury, get to the net, those second and third opportunities. Those rebounds were sitting there, so they could have potted in a couple of those, but going the physical route, you know, they're the heavyweight champs of the world so far in my books.
You know, I'm glad you mentioned Whitecloud on Perry as well. Like, that's a thunderous hit. There were a couple of other sort of sidebar games within the game. And, Stewie, you always talk about these. Man, Ben Chiarot and Max Pacioretty had something going all night long. Like, every time. And then when Pacioretty hit Chiarot with that Peter Forsberg cold shoulder bump back, I don't even know what we're going to end up calling it 5 minutes from now. But whatever that hit was, we'll just refer to it as the Peter Forsberg. You thought, wow, that's taking this one to another level. Puck wasn't at that point near either of them. And Pacioretty's bumping back to send a message. Let's get this straight. Max Pacioretty. Like, you know, you've talked about this before, Stewie and Justin. When you have your skilled players playing like that, playing that physically, then, you know, what's your old saying, Stewie? You have a team or do you have a club?
Yeah, yeah.
Like when you see that, that's a team, right?
Yeah, and you saw, you know, they try to intimidate Pacioretty after, you know, Pacioretty tripped Perry off the faceoff, and Perry's like, I'll kill you, we'll fight, and Pacioretty's just like, yeah, right, okay, sure. And going back to that Chiarot and Pacioretty thing, it looked for me, to me on that angle, that Chiarot elbowed Pacioretty in the head, and then Pacioretty was sort of looking at him like, why are you elbowing me? So I didn't see the replay on that, but I thought Chiarot gave it to Pacioretty, not the other way around.
What'd you think of the physicality, Justin?
Well, it's essential, and I, you know, enjoy the concept, as I mentioned, but I thought that, you know, the amount Chiarot was involved last night, like, it really exposed that this Montreal team without Jeff Petrie was going to have to rely on people that you don't necessarily want to be relying on against great players in so many big minutes. Like, the loss of Petrie was big, and then you saw Weber look like he hurt his hand or re-injured his paw from earlier in the playoffs. So if you're without those two guys, you know, I don't know, you know, you don't want to be too apocalyptic about it, but like, that pretty much submarines Montreal's chances if those two guys can't play hockey for them.
Well, the thing about Petrie is too, and we've been saying this, you know, pretty much all season long, and we said it in the playoffs, although we didn't really see evidence of it much in the Maple Leafs or Winnipeg Jets series. If you don't have Petrie, who's breaking the puck out?
Yeah. Oh, that's a major issue, isn't it?
Like, I hate to just sort of break it down to one player and one thing, but isn't he kind of the only guy that can break the puck out from the back end?
Yeah, Montreal looked kind of slow, but I don't think it was them looking that slow. But just the back pressure by Vegas. And that's one thing I don't think a lot of people focus on, that back pressure with Tuck and Stone just picking your pocket, where they could barely get it across the red line before, you know, Vegas is swooping the puck and going the other way. So that's one thing. I don't really teach that. I don't practice that. There's not enough hours in the day at these prices to teach that. But these guys run a clinic on back pressure. And I remember, you know, DeBoer's teams and them that we worked on that probably 2-3 times a week on just that back pressure. It's a big, big part of the game, and it's working well for Vegas right now.
You know, mentioned
the concern, just gonna say the concern for Montreal is like that top line did get outshot attempted and all that. Like, are how long is or that gonna last for? How often is gonna happen in the series? Mm-hmm. Happened early in the Colorado series, and then those guys kind of took over.
You know, Alex Tuck exists in a weird place in the game. Everyone who watches Vegas consistently knows how great this guy is. I guess to some extent you can say this about Mark Stone, although he gets more headlines now than ever before. But man, Alex Tuck is good. Like, you always look at you know, who the playoffs shines a light on and who gets talked about more. Every game we watch Vegas, Alex Tuck does something. It's a burst. It's something sudden. It's getting himself open. Last night was that play in the third period as he gets behind everybody and rings it off the pipe behind Carey Price. I know there's a lot of teams that want do-overs on the expansion draft and who they left exposed and who they wanted to protect and the deals they made to keep their guys. The Florida Panthers are one of those teams with Marchessault and Smith. The Anaheim Ducks, I know at that point they had an embarrassment of riches on the back end, but letting Shea Theodore go is real, real tough. I know Columbus, you know, thought that they were set down the middle and wouldn't be harmed by exposing William Karlsson. They probably want a do-over there, but man, Minnesota to keep Dumba and Halla doing that and surrendering Alex Tuck. Jeez, that's a tough one. Like, good on George McPhee. Again,
I'm
we keep
going
back
now.
To the expansion draft. Like, good on George McPhee, because he picked a lot of pockets here. But man, that when you look at how good Alex Tuck is, and he was like an 18th overall in the Aaron Ekblad draft.
But you know why, though?
Like,
we got to go, why? Why did they let him go? Why did they let him go? One name.
They protect Dumba. Wanted to protect Matt Dumba.
No. Jordan Greenway.
Greenway?
He's going to step in and fill the spot?
So Alex Tuck is who they thought Jordan Greenway was going to be. So they think that Greenway had a little bit more probably potential offensively, too. But you know, for Tuck, you know who he reminds me? He reminds me of a former teammate of mine in David Booth, where everyone, every time he was coming down the wing, they'd just be like, here comes David Booth. And then, oh my gosh, how does David Booth have a breakaway right now? And David Booth probably scored. He's one year, he had 28 goals, and I think 15 were on the fly off the wing. And just a guy that big and that fast, they don't really anticipate him being that fast and cutting into the net. So I'm surprised that with the jury being out on him for so long that they haven't adapted. Or maybe he is just that fast. And when you see the train on the track, you don't really want to jump in front of it.
I got a few comparable names for you.
And I don't know. Sorry to interrupt. And I didn't know. And I don't know if that Greenway timeline lines up anyway. So don't even bother checking on that.
Or hold on, because I know they wanted to protect. They wanted to keep Dumba, but maybe you say to yourself, like, if you're Chuck Fletcher at that point, you're saying to yourself, we can let go of Alex Tuck because we think Greenway is going to turn into that guy, and we don't have anyone that's going to be able to replace Matt Dumba.
The comparable guy for me, I was thinking, like, the in terms of breakaways and conversion rates, is like a Michael Grabner. Grabner doesn't quite have the size of Tuck. You know who does, though, is Miles Wood. Miles Wood is another guy in New Jersey huge guy, tons of breakaway, tons of speed. Like, you feel like if they had, like, 5% more finishing ability, they'd be, like, consistent 30-goal scorers in the NHL, because they just create so much offense with their speed alone.
It is interesting, man. Like, to your point about, we've got Greenaway coming, we can leave this guy. Like, Columbus again, like... Columbus lets William Karlsson go because they thought Alexander Venberg was going to be the number one center. And they thought he was going to be that guy. And Again, the Vegas story, we've all been over a million different times. A couple of things I do want to mention about the game still. Play of the game, true or false? The Shea Theodore fake shot pass to Alec Martinez. Do you know who bid on that? Everybody. Everybody on the ice, everybody in the stands, everybody on the benches, everybody watching on TVs and tablets. Everybody bit on that shot. That was as close to a perfect shot turning into a pass that we've seen this season in the NHL.
Yeah, he really went all the way through with the fake. You know, usually you abandon the fake and turn it into the pass on descent. And, you know, he actually slapped the ice, then repositioned it, which, to be honest, it wasn't the quickest execution because Price almost got across on, you know, what was not what should have been a wide open net. It was just such a heavy sold fake, but it's because he sold it so heavy that Price is like at the hash marks coming out to challenge it. So it was a thing of beauty. And full credit, by the way, to Martinez for finishing that. Sometimes when you're standing there with your stick cocked on a wide open net and you know you're going to get the shot, it's like, I don't know, it's like hitting a foul shot. Like, it should be easy, but for some reason it never is when the pressure's on.
Yeah, Martinez probably wasn't the only, was the only one that wasn't surprised because he was cocked, ready to go. And, you know, I was a player that was, you know, guilty of overpassing, but I've tried that pass many a times. I ended up like Dennis Weidman on his shootout, just like riding his stick into the corner. So that is a very high skill play. And to make Carey Price...
Hang on, that reference, Stewie, is, if anyone doesn't know, that's like the worst penalty shot of all time where he makes a move and ends up landing on his butt, spinning in the corner. I can't believe you just pulled that one out, Stewie, but good for you.
Yeah, honestly, I remember trying to make that pass. I was trying to like do like a fake shot, and then I like break my ankles and fall to the corner and looking at Guy Chiarot, and he's just like, Stewie. So that is a, that's a very high skill play, and I'm sure there's going to be a lot of kids trying that next year, because to make Carey Price and the whole building bite on that, that's a very, very high high risk play, high reward play.
Let's, and again, Craig Simpson joins us bottom of the hour, more on this game. A little bit more on Carey Price. Because there were a couple of moments. Like, you look at these, like, look at those first couple of goals. Like, the Theodore goal to kick it off, like, that's a great screen. You guys talked about the set play. Martinez, that's like the best fake we've seen all season long. There were a couple of moments, like the Carey Price save on Mark Stone on that two-on-one on the pass from Max Pacioretty was gorgeous. There was a great save on Jonathan Marchessault in the second as well. We were like, oh yeah. Okay, Price is dialed in. Like, I look at these goals, and again, we'll focus on the fact that it's, you know, three defensemen. It's Theodore, Martinez, and Holden that get the goals. Matthias Janmark, the only forward that finds the back of the net. But I look at these, and I'm like, I'm not blaming Price on any of these.
No. No, what's so impressive about Price is when he makes these lateral pushes, they're not wild flails that leave him out of position, nor is his body position in such a way that he feels like he's at peak desperation. Like, to go post to post on the Stone one, his body is still up. Like, you see a lot of goaltenders rush to get a pad across on the ice, so their stomach's on the ice. He's still, like, up and almost level to take that shot. Same with the Marchessault one. Like, he's still got his upper body in an upright position rather than his the crest of his logo on the ice to get across in true desperation. He's just so composed, and with those pushes, he seems like he's in a good spot to recover if there's a rebound. I mean, when people say he's the best goalie in the world, regardless of what you think his numbers look like the past year, like, that's where their case is strongest, is to look at those moments and how, even in desperate times, he's going to be able to be there for the next one, and he's still just so composed.
Yeah, and I got laughed out of the Twitter off of Twitter street when I was talking about Carey Price struggles on those side to side plays, because he's a goalie. He's not like Quick or Price. He doesn't rely on his athleticism. He relies on his training to get across. So sometimes he doesn't come across enough because he is known to be waiting for the puck as they're trying to make the save. So the pucks usually just hit him. So you look at some other goaltenders where they're coming way across and trying to make those pushes hard. Price is the exact opposite. So that's why I think he got beat on a couple of those goals, because you live by it and you die by it at the same time.
Montreal's 7-game win streak is over. The Vegas blue line very much dominated this one, and we just talked about Carey Price. Quick thought on Marc-Andre Fleury. We talked about, you know, the sidebar to this series was going to be the Pacioretty-Suzuki deal. And the other sidebar was going to be Marc-Andre Fleury versus Carey Price. 28 saves, Justin, for Marc-Andre Fleury, and one stolen helmet off the head of Brendan Gallagher. How do you assess his evening?
Well, he was biggest for them when they needed him most at the start of the game. Like, you know, I talked yesterday about how Vegas, and I've mentioned it today, gave up the least goals against in the regular season. They're not the New York Islanders in terms of structure or their commitment to the defensive side of the puck necessarily, or at least in their ability to execute it. But they got Fleury. They have Fleury or Leonard. Either way, they're pretty good with whoever's in net. So, yeah, Montreal came out gangbusters last night. Like, that could have been one of those games where they get up a goal or two and all of a sudden they can do what Montreal has done, rely on Carey Price. But Fleury didn't let it happen. He was sharp from the start. It made the world of difference to Vegas. And once Montreal got down 1-0, I was like, okay, like, this has been the problem with this Canadiens team. Once they're chasing the game and they have to open up, it can end up 4-1, as it did. It's when they have the lead that they have a real shot at closing it out.
Yeah, and I think the Canadians need to come out really, really strong next game too, because if this goes a little any longer, you know, they could be getting bubble Demko'd here, where they can just be so frustrated that nothing's going in. So I like the fact that they crashed the net second and third opportunities. I think that's going to be their only way out of this. But Fleury, he's dialed in, and, you know, just seeing him making some of these huge saves, and he's got the confidence. Dude, Conn Smythe, I think I had him ranked number one for Conn Smythe after game one. He's still my leader for sure.
You got some good lines going today, Stewie. Getting bubble Demko'd? I like that. consider that one stolen. Oh man, they got bubble Demko'd.
Vancouver fans hate that. I brought that up like 2 months ago. They're like, "What are you talking about? Don't bring that up. Don't bring that up." Hashtag Canucks.
Hey, today, by the way, today, speaking of Vancouver, today's the 10-year anniversary of that game 7. Hey.
I enjoyed the there's been, I think, two articles done on the couple from the Riot picture, the kissing couple.
Yes.
From the Riot picture. I know Wyshynski was one of them. But, yeah, they're married. They got a kid. It's amazing.
They live in Australia.
They survived. Yeah, I know.
They got a bar. Heroes. They got a I saw the Ian and Hannah Mansing piece on The National with that. It's fantastic. That was like a wonderful, you know, sensitive moment during all that. I can remember. I remember wildly because I was there for that. Scott Morrison and I were doing the iDesk. Everybody else was in the rink or in the truck. And Morrison and I were outside the CBC at our location, about a block and a half away from the post office where the first explosion went off. And I remember them grabbing me and ScoMo really fast and bringing us into CBC. Jody Vance was there with us. She was working at CBC Vancouver at that point. And I can remember trying to get... Oh, guys, I remember trying to get from the CBC in Vancouver to the hotel. I can't remember which hotel we were staying at. But, like, they had all these restaurants along the way. Doors were locked. There was one restaurant, I think it was an Earl's, that had a lot of their patrons in the freezer because it was the safest place to be. When the tear gas went off, it started to leak into all these restaurants. So that was the only place that you could go. I remember talking to a couple of people from TSN, and they're like, "Yeah, we just got released from the meat locker because they had us in the freezer, because that was the only place that we weren't going to get tear gas." And I honestly, Borny, so me and Scott are walking, and we're like, you have like our briefcases and suits, and like this is like there's like fires and police on horses and like crystal meth fights. And I remember watching one guy.
The guy with the trident. I remember.
Right?
That.
It's insane. Like there's one guy.
Did you say crystal meth fight? What?
Yeah. Like all over. Like, dude, I saw one guy.
You've never had one,
just let that slide. What do you mean? So were they
like
throwing
a
it at each other
expensive.
Or there were two guys on crystal meth?
Yeah, two guys on crystal. No, two guys fighting fight. Over it. No, I saw, honestly, dude, Stewie, I saw one guy way back to the hotel, me and Scott Morrison, and we both looked at each other and we were like, "Oh man, we got to get out of here." One guy get hit in the face harder, Stewie, than I've ever seen anyone hit in my life, and the guy didn't flinch. I'm like, "Oh man, we're in crystal meth fight territory here. We got to get out of here." And so we're trying to weasel
That's
our way
out of the podcast.
Not this one, I hope.
Crystal meth.
And I remember
I challenge you to a crystal meth duel. Garage band.
And I remember Scobo and I were walking back, and all of a sudden, like out of the crowd, someone goes, "Hey, it's the two guys from the iDesk." And Scobo and I are just like, "Oh man, we're gonna get jumped here." There's like fires and brawls and all. I couldn't get the tear gas taste out of my mouth for a few days.
Oh man,
that's how bad it was. That was craziness. The kissing couple perseveres, and they're together, and they're married. And to your point, they have a kid, and they, I think she works for the government, and he owns a bar. And above the bar, there is that iconic picture of all of it. That was one of the wildest pro days.
It would have been a better story. It would have been a better story if they conceived and their child was Quinn Hughes.
Riot.
He was born. And that rumor. We're starting that rumor. And he came back to light.
There's a rumor, Elliot.
Bring him to the promised land.
That child turned into a
Yeah, there's the rumor. The outsiders. Quinn Hughes.
You got to put that one out, Elliot. Quinn Hughes was conceived in the Vancouver riots. We're off the rails.
Yeah.
It's got to break. It's got to break. Let's go to break before I lose it. Craig Simpson, other side of this little break. More on Vegas and Montreal. We'll get on the Islanders page as well. Game two of Barry Trotz versus John Cooper. You know it as the Islanders versus the Tampa Bay Lightning. Hockey Central, crystal meth fights and all, continues on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Welcome back to the program. Don't forget, tonight, game two between the Islanders and the Tampa Bay Lightning. Islanders lead the series 1-0. 8 o'clock is the puck drop. Pre-game Hockey Central with your host, Ron McLean, gets underway at 7:30. Watch this one on Sportsnet and on CBC. Meanwhile, more on Montreal and Vegas. Our good friend Craig Simpson from Hockey Night in Canada joins us now. And Simmer, first of all, thanks so much for doing this. And second of all, you've talked about this concept a number of different times and occasionally here as well. The idea of how you bounce back or how you react after a loss like Montreal just went through last night. Before we get into the specifics of what we saw last night, if you're Montreal looking ahead to game two, what are you trying to address between now and then?
Oh, boy. I think all you're trying to do is just get your senses of what this series is going to be like. I think when you get into a new series and you don't really have any sense of reality of what the team that you were just playing, you know, was like, because you hadn't played them all year, you're just looking for guidelines of how you think you need to play against them. I think they just have to bounce back like they have every time throughout the regular season and through the playoffs. Understand that they've got a team that is a hard team to play against. They're a team that is really aggressive. They're a team that will come at you hard. They're physical. I don't think it's any time to panic. I just think you got to realize that you now know your opponent better than you did 24 hours ago.
Stewie.
Yeah, Vegas got three goals off from their defensemen last night. And I think it was just based off of, you know, minor mistakes that Montreal made. Do you think they really dominated last night? And what can Montreal do to try to isolate them for game two?
Well, I thought the top 3D for Vegas were dominant for sure. There's no question. I mean, Petrangelo, Theodore, Martinez, they really dictated how the game was going to be played. I thought they were a reason why Vegas was able to take control of the game. They showed confidence. They were aggressive. They moved the puck well. They were physical. You know, I just think you needed to have a game to understand what you were dealing with and what your opponent was going to be like. And I think for Montreal, there's no reason to panic. You go through game one and you say, okay, this is the way they played. I thought they did a brilliant job, Vegas did, of getting Carey Price to have to move have to, you know, deal with a threat in front of them and then move laterally. I thought they did everything that the Winnipeg Jets were unable to do in round two. And, you know, the reality is that's only game one, though. So the beauty of playoffs is you adjust and you move on and you try to, you know, deal with what happens next after one game in a series.
I thought a bright spot for Montreal was their ability to at least limit Vegas' top six. They didn't get a whole ton from Mark Stone and Pacioretty and Chandler Stephenson. What is it that Deno group does so well that is able to keep some of the best players in the world from excelling the way they normally do?
Well, I think when that line's playing at its best, they're just efficient at... You know, they got great sticks. They got great positional play. They don't overreact. They don't get caught when they know that they're in a mismatch, maybe defensively. I just think that Montreal has done a brilliant job all playoffs of just being a hard team to play against. So I don't think that's going to change at all. I think it's reality that... you know, after game one, I think you get a bit of a sense of, oh, okay, this is a completely different type of opponent that you're dealing with. So you have to find your way to realize how you have to play against a new opponent to be successful. But I think one of the real strengths of the way Montreal's played is, you know, Deneau's line can be dangerous offensively when they have to be, but they also understand the role of defensive, you know, responsibility in the course of the series. So this will probably be more than any other series that they've had to this point, important for them to be balancing that as well.
I'm with Craig Simpson from Hockey Night in Canada on Hockey Central, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. I want to personalize something here. One specific moment, we were just talking about this, Simmer, before you came on. The Shea Theodore fake shot pass to Alec Martinez, where everybody everywhere watching in the building playing no matter what bit on that thing, and we talked plenty about it. I'm curious, from your experiences in hockey and all the teams you played on some great teams, you've been around some great players, you know, I always tell my kids, you know, when you're out there, give out bad information, fake. Who is the best at that you ever saw or shared the ice with?
Oh, God. I have no idea, Jeff. I have no idea. I mean, it was a great play. I think the reality that you have in those kind of moments are... the bottom line for me is you do a pre-scout on what you have to do against the opponent that you're playing against. And to me, Vegas did it to perfection that both Toronto and Winnipeg weren't able to. I mean, if you look at the replays of how they were able to handle getting Price to move laterally, or you got traffic in front, all the different things that we've talked about through two series to this point that teams haven't been able to do, they did it in game one. So I don't have a specific guy in my brain, and maybe it's a little too early here. I haven't been able to think of much, but I just thought that was, if you're going to beat, I think the goal came seconds after I said, like, nobody's been shooting on Carey one-on-one because you're not going to beat him. So you're constantly trying to wait for traffic, or you're trying to wait for a moment that you have somebody off the side. And I just thought Theodore's play was brilliant in the way of mm-hmm. selling that and forcing Price to come out and be aggressive at the right time.
Canadians need a little bit more from Josh Anderson, who only has one goal in the 12 games this playoffs. What have you noticed in his game? He had a little bit more hop in his step last night, but where can he improve other than just saying, hey, watch some video of Alex Tuck and do that?
He hasn't done anything. And, you know, he came into the playoffs, hadn't scored in 11. You know, he had... had 9 goals in the first 13 games that he played, and he's got 9 goals since. So, you know, I understand there's times that you don't know what guys are dealing with. Maybe you're a little banged up and it's hard to play. But I think if you listen to my voice during the game when he had that early chance and he cut from the outside, it was noticeable, like, oh, okay, there's Josh. Like, that's the kind of play that you have to make. And that was the only time of the game that he did it. So, you know, you have to realize that those are the moments that you have to make every single time you get out there. And if you're not going to be scoring, you better be physical. You better get in on the forecheck. You better turn pucks over. You know, I think the one thing that's hard is when the puck's not going in the net, you understand that guys go through droughts like that, that's going to happen, but you better be having an impact in another way. And I just think he's been way too inconsistent. If you're not going to be scoring, you better be physical, you better be skating, you better get set the pace, and that's something that he's been inconsistent with for sure.
What do you think of the Habs defense situation with Petrie being out and Weber looking like he's got a bit of a sore paw now? What could become of that?
Well, I think you just, like anything in playoffs, you know, the game changes nightly. You have ups and downs. You got guys who are dealing with different injuries on every front. I think the one great thing about Montreal all the way through this playoffs is that they've been able to adjust to their game. You know, they were down early in the Toronto series. They found a way to not give up a lead, not be trailing. You didn't have to chase a game. The one thing I would say, guys, is, you know, when your defense is missing key guys, it's hard to be chasing from behind. Let's be clear. The one thing Montreal has been really good at is getting the lead, securing it, being neat and tidy. You don't have to try to change your game to try to get back in the game. And I think that's going to be the real challenge, is do you have a team now that can handle some the depth issues with Petrie not being there? On the other side, their D were the best part of their game, and the challenge for Montreal is to try to handle that as well and try to get through it and become an impact on the series as well.
Simmer, last one for you. How much of a factor do you think the crowd is at T-Mobile Arena? Do we overstate it, understate it? How much of a thing is this?
I think the crowd's a huge impact, but I think I said last night, the crowd didn't have an impact on Montreal at all. I thought they were brilliant early, taking the crowd out of it. Of all the things that we thought coming into a series where, you know, they haven't played in front of 18,000 people in over a year, I thought Montreal did a heck of a job of playing the game early and controlling things. And I think it gives Vegas, obviously, on home ice, an edge. It gives you some energy. But I don't think it was a factor at all in the game last night. I thought the difference in the game last night was the fact that Vegas top guys play a little bit better. They controlled. They pushed the play more than Montreal was able to do. So I think I always felt, you know, that you look at the energy of an opponent's building and you take some energy out of it so that you play harder on the road, you feel good about yourself. And I actually thought Montreal did a heck of a job on it. So I do think it gives Vegas an edge, but I don't think it was an issue at all from the perspective of Montreal.
Excellent points. Always appreciate the analysis. Craig, thanks so much for this. We'll check back regular.
All right. Take care, guys.
There he is, Craig Simpson from Hockey Net in Canada, alongside Chris Cuthbert, covering the Vegas Golden Knights Montreal Canadiens series. Vegas wins 4-1 last night to grab a 1-0 series lead. The Islanders take a 1-0 series lead into their game tonight at Amalie Arena against the Tampa Bay Lightning. Spend some time here on this one. What do we expect tonight? I mean, the euphoria, if you're an Islanders fan, has maybe worn off a little bit from the elation that was 2 days ago when they grabbed a 1-0 series lead and said, well, at worst case, we have a split in Tampa. We are good to go. Borny, this is the sweet spot of the bat for you. You're the Islanders. Yeah. What are you thinking tonight?
Well, I'm thinking that you're not going to go into Tampa Bay and win in regulation handily a couple games in a row. Like, you're going to get a better game out of Tampa. You're going to get a better game out of Tampa regardless of how you play. So I think it's a matter of steel yourself, and, you know, you're going to have to be able to beat them when they're at their best to get through a series. So, you know, what I expect tonight is they need a goaltending performance. They're going to get shots against. It's going to happen. Tampa's got too many stars for it not to happen. So to steal two on the road as the underdog, you need a goalie to show up big early and kind of kill that hope for the Lightning.
Yeah, I'm expecting round five of a boxing match, because the first four, generally a feeling out process. You sort of, you know, feel out the other team, see how they're going. But I expect Tampa Bay to come out gangbusters, and they had zero rush chances last game. I would not be surprised if they have four or five after the first period. So they got to weather the storm, good goaltending, special team special. And as Ken Reed says, pucks in deep.
That still blows my mind. That first game, how Tampa was, and Borny, you mentioned this yesterday, how Tampa was completely unable to generate anything off the rush. I don't know how you do that against a team like Tampa with that much skill, with that much firepower. I guess the question I'm asking is how? Like, how do the Islanders do this?
They just have such a supreme amount of patience. Like, you know, they don't feel like they're the team that has to push the offense, so they just can sit back and wait, and it gives them a big advantage. People don't expect them to go score goals. They expect Tampa to go score goals. So when nothing's happening, it feels like a positive result for the Islanders, and I think that engenders a lot of good feelings about what they're doing. So it builds on itself. You got to get to them early and start have them feeling like it's not working.
What do you think of that, Stewie?
Yeah, it brings me back to a term, fight for your inches. And, you know, we saw the goal that Janmark scored last night. The Islanders, they just clear out that crease. They make sure that they hit to hurt. They make sure that they pay attention to every single little detail. So it's very meticulous. It's very hard to play, but you need a certain type of personnel to buy in. And it just seems that the Islanders have the perfect complement, personnel to play the system.
All right, we look forward to this one. It is the Islanders. It is the Tampa Bay Lightning. It feels very much, we'll go to break on this one, Borny, get your thoughts on it. It feels very much like, even though we just saw these two teams play in the bubble, in the semifinals, it seems like there's something profoundly different about this Islanders squad. And it's not just a couple of new faces either. Like, doesn't it feel like it is something more? I don't know. It's hard to quantify, but it feels more like this Islanders team is more comfortable in their skin than they were last year when they faced this Tampa team, who themselves are pretty much the exact same squad.
Well, they've been validated to an extent. I think last year, you know, a lot of people are going, it happens in playoffs every year. Some team that's not actually all that good gets a couple of lucky bounces. They find their way through. Like, they did it a second year in a row, and they just beat Boston and Pittsburgh. Like, you can't really challenge them as a good team at this point. And I think that also breeds a form of confidence that leads to more good play. It's just it works, and it isn't luck. They're doing something, you know, very much on purpose and successfully.
Pre-game tonight, 7:30. Ron McLean, your host, Hockey Central. The puck drops just after 8 o'clock on Sportsnet and CBC tonight. Game 2 between the Islanders and the Tampa Bay Lightning. Quick step away, and we're back in a moment. More Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Okay, welcome back to the program. Anthony Stewart, Justin Bourne, yours truly, Jeff Merrick. A couple of moments here to finish up, and don't forget game 2 tonight, Islanders and the Tampa Bay Lightning. Interesting times in Boston right now. Don Sweeney today mentioning, man, this is bad. This just like guts your D. That blue line collectively had 8 concussions this season. This was a really tough year for the Boston Bruins as they persevered through injuries and things like aging curves. The other interesting note coming out today is that as much as the Boston Bruins want David Krejci back, as their second line center behind Patrice Bergeron. He's taking time before making that decision. Sweeney mentioning, Stewie, that he may want to go back home. Do we tend to forget that about Europeans, that that is certainly a draw and an option, where North American players would just say, sure, I'll play. This is home for me, sort of, after all. We tend to forget that there is still that lure of going back overseas to Czech Republic, Slovakia, Finland, Sweden, Slovakia, wherever. Right, Stewie?
Yeah, and people tend to forget, Krejci, he's 35 years old. He's not 28, 29, and he's played a lot of hockey, you know, and had some injuries in North America. And these guys are legends when they go back. You don't understand, like, Hasek's a politician over there. And again, I remember Yuri Talusti going back, and he's got like 1,000 acres of land. He lives in a castle, and this is like for the low price of $99.99. So I understand the allure. Yeah.
He's just got vats of hot oil and archers in his house.
Yeah, and he's got a moat. He's got a moat and certified knights working for him. He's got real knights. None of this fake golden knights. He's got real golden knights working for him.
Well, that's living. That's the goal.
Yeah, until you have like a moat with crocodiles, you really haven't arrived. You really haven't made it. In life, do you have a quick thought on what we expect from moats? From the Boston Bruins, or on moats, or knights, or kings, or flaming torches? Anything to Stewie's point, Justin?
Well, I mean, Krejci would be a big loss. That's an important part of what they're doing. You know, Taylor Hall loved playing with them. Does that affect Taylor Hall negotiations? Is it all coming unglued for Boston Bruins? Stay tuned next turns.
Yeah, well, we saw Chara bolt, right? And you wonder about David Krejci, and then you wonder about the cascading effect. Does that move Charlie Coyle up then to a second line center position? Wow, we got to Charlie Coyle on the second line pretty fast. Already moved Trent Frederick up into the lineup even more. Interesting times. Game 2 tonight. The Isles and the Bolts. Enjoy it. Back tomorrow.